Professor Charles Tiefer of the University of Baltimore Law School and a contributor to Forbes.com and a former member of the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, writing about cost overruns on an Air Force GPS system that Raytheon has done. Professor Charles, it's great to talk to you as always. I'd go particularly to the end of this piece, which we have linked at federalnewsradio.com, regarding your insight into a potential change that defense acquisition reform experts in Congress would like to propagate. What's the change, and what do you think of that change? Thanks for your time today, sir.
Well, and it's you have the premier show, so it's a pleasure to be with you. The change, which is currently in conference, has passed. McCain pushed it through the Senate. A weaker version has gone through the House. That's why they're in conference now. In a power acquisition decision power, the making of the key acquisition decisions on the weapons systems would be shifted from where it currently is in the Defense Department, the civilian side, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, shifted from there and over to the services themselves, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines in this instance. So when you have systems, either like the one that I talked about, the GPS system for locating, for sort of weapon systems to locate where they are, or the other new systems, instead of getting what you might call as a very skeptical set of decisions made in the Defense Department, would go through the much more enthusiastic and optimistic audience in the services, the Air Force, and so forth.
The decision to change the structure of the oversight has, in some measure, already been made. Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics that you just referenced, has already decided to devolve more oversight to the secretaries of each of the service branches. Now, that's different than what Senator McCain has proposed, because he would have that power rest with the chiefs of staff, the uniformed military leaders of each of the branches, rather than the civilian appointees of each successive administration. Does it make a difference to you that Secretary Kendall's proposing that civilians in each branch oversee rather than uniforms, or is it just the idea that that decision-making power rests within the branches that you find unappealing, Charles?
You're quite right that he's tried to get out a little ahead of this push. It's amazing. This push would undo a piece of the Goldwater-Nichols merger of authority into jointness in the department as far as acquisition. But Kendall has tried to get out ahead of that. I think the big issue is whether it stays in the main department or it goes out to the services. I think it's a secondary issue whether it goes out to the civilians in the services, like the Secretary of the Army, or whether it goes out to the chiefs of staff or the chiefs of operations, the military themselves. The difference is of whether the perspective on making a decision, whether you make a decision, let's say, on they're going to be giving a contract award in this year, they think, on the long-range strategic bomber. And the question is, after that, would the Air Force, whether it's the Secretary of the Air Force or the Air Force military, whether the Air Force will make the decisions for that bomber project, or whether the main department will. You just know that the Air Force is going to be wildly enthusiastic and optimistic in the building of this weapon, and it just won't worry if the tests for the concept or the requirements or the prototype. The Air Force is just going to say, "Let's go, let's go." And the main department would be willing to say, wait a second, there isn't support for that.
Professor Charles Tiefer of the University of Baltimore Law School, former member of the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, writing for Forbes.com about an Air Force GPS system is suffering problems via contractor Raytheon, and writing within that about defense acquisition reform as the House and Senate intend to act upon it. Professor, one could argue, and I've seen this argued around town, that even with Goldwater Nichols, we still have the issues we have with the F-35 program, we still have the issues we have with the littoral combat ship. And so, although very well intended, the Goldwater Nichols reforms didn't really yield the kind of oversight and requirements building and other issues that the authors of the bill had hoped.
I quite agree that we've had some huge procurement, weapon system procurement failures. The ones you just cited, there was great trouble with the F-35 before it's gone ahead, and it still is plagued with troubles. But the huge problems, even with putting the decision authority in AT&L, in Defense Department itself. A classic example that's cited in this debate, Future Combat Systems, which was the Rumsfeld project, and which was supposed to was originally planned that it would go all the way to several hundred billion dollars. And the incoming, the act of the incoming Obama administration was to scrap it. And there was no controversy because it was a very bad idea that had moved ahead very wrongly. So you're quite right. Many say that even though the existing system, there's too much enthusiasm and optimism and not enough skeptical looking, and especially risk reduction, which Kendall points to, his people will do risk reduction. They will figure out a route for the weapon system that anticipates the possibility of problems. And the services, they just don't want to do that. They want to fix it afterwards by saying, let's just get some cost overrun money, or let's just extend the timetable for rolling the weapon out.
There's one place where the what you call cheerleading doesn't happen, and has in fact the office has proved to be quite a bit of trouble for the people running the F-35 program, the LCS program, and other systems programs, and that is the office of the Director of Operational Test and Evaluation. That's Michael Gilmore's office. Do you see that office being potentially a more prominent part of defense acquisition reform, or that it should be a more prominent piece than it's playing right now, Charles?
I certainly you're right. Their tests during the F-35 and during other weapons systems have given the reason not to go past milestones. It's all about milestone decisions, whether to go up to prototype, whether to go from prototype to full production. And the testing office has said that they haven't passed the tests. Don't let them pass the milestone. And they are key. And I think there's going to be, I think if Congress has its way, there's going to be, in effect, a human sacrifice of the testing office. There's a lot of antagonism on Capitol Hill. They say it holds things up, and it's paperwork, and it's lawyers, and it's bureaucracy. And they don't like that their favorite pet systems that are built in their districts and states are held up by that office.
Charles, what's the way forward here? Is the remedy only legislative through the NDAA or through a revised, updated version of something like Goldwater Nichols? Or is there something more incremental that would achieve the changes that you'd like to see?
I think we're in for a period in which it's not clear at all what's going to happen this year's defense authorization. In effect, there's a veto warning out for it because it goes above the budget that's currently in place. And so we may see a two-year legislative battle in which Senator McCain keeps trying to get this change through. And as a casualty, in effect, of the budget process, the NDAA is not going through, certainly not with all the provisions that that people would like on it.
Professor, it's terrific to talk to you, as always. I'm happy to link your piece at federalnewsradio.com, and I thank you for the conversation, as always.
A pleasure to be there.